Oba had had a hard night, but he had emerged a new man, a rich man. Wiping his nose on his jacket sleeve, he made for the door. It was time for him to go to a cozy inn and have a drink. If anyone deserved one, it was Oba Rall. Jensen suspiciously scanned the faces at the inn, looking for any that might betray murderous design. She still felt sick from the sight of what had been done to Lethea. This night there were monsters about. Men looked her way, but the twinkle in their eyes seemed merry, not murderous. But how would she know before it was too late? She ached to take the stairs two at a time. "Easy," Sebastian whispered, apparently believing she was on the verge of panicked flight. Maybe she was. His grip on her arm tightened. "Let's not make people suspicious." They took the stairs one at a time, moving at a measured pace, just a couple going to their room. In their room, Jensen burst into motion, gathering the few items they had removed from their packs, replacing them, securing the straps and buckles. Even Sebastian, checking his weapons beneath his cloak, seemed unnerved by what had happened to Lethea. Jensen made sure that her knife was free in its scabbard. "You sure you wouldn't like to get some sleep?" Lethea couldn't have told them anything. She didn't know we were staying here at the inn. It might be better to start fresh at dawn. She shot him a look as she shouldered her pack. "Right," he said. He caught her arm. "Jensen, slow down. If you run, people will want to know why you're running." He was in enemy territory. He would know how to go about the business of not raising suspicion. Jensen nodded. "What should I do?" "Just act like we're going down for a drink or listen to the music. If you insist on going directly out, walk. Don't call attention to us by running. Maybe we're just going to visit a friend or a relative. Who's to say? But we don't want people to wonder if there's something wrong. People forget normal. They remember when things look wrong." Abashed, she nodded again. "I guess I'm not very good at this. Close-up running, I mean. I've been running and hiding my whole life, but not like this. When they're so close, I can almost feel their breath on my neck." He smiled that warm smile of his, the one that looked so good on him. "You aren't trained in this kind of thing. I wouldn't expect you to know how to act. Even so, I don't think I've ever met another woman who was as good as you are under such pressure. You're doing fine, you really are." Jensen felt a little better to know that she wasn't acting like a complete fool. He had a way about him that gave her confidence, put her at ease, made her able to do things she didn't think she could. He let her decide on her own what it was she wanted to do, and then he backed up her decision. Not many men would do that for a woman. Down the steps once again, for the last time, she could feel the door on the other side of the room, as if she were drowning and it was the only air. People so close, rushing against her, still made her uneasy, made her feel the desperate need for that air. She had learned earlier, though, that the men weren't the threat she had thought. She was somewhat humbled by how wrong she had been about them. Where before she had seen thieves and cutthroats, she now saw farmers, craftsmen, laborers, joining together for company, companionship, and some harmless recreation. Still, there were killers somewhere close this night. After seeing Lethea, there could be no doubt of that. Jensen could never have imagined that anyone could be that perverted. She knew that if they caught her, they would eventually do those kinds of things to her, too, before she was allowed to die. She felt her stomach roil with nausea at the vivid memory of what she had seen. She held back her tears, but she needed the air of outdoors and the solitude of the night. As she and Sebastian wound their way through the crowd and toward that air, she bumped into a big man as they crossed paths. Stopped by the human wall, she looked up into the handsome face. She remembered him. He was the man they had seen on the road to Lethea's place earlier. He lifted his cap in greeting. "Evening." He grinned at her. "Good evening," she said. She told herself to smile and make it believable, normal. She wasn't sure if she was doing a good job of it, but he seemed to find it convincing. He didn't act as shy as she thought he had seemed before. Even the way he carried himself, his movements, were more sure. Maybe it was just that her smile was working as she had hoped.
"You two look like you could use a drink."
When Jensen frowned, not knowing what the man meant, he gestured at her face, and then at Sebastian.
"Your noses are red with the cold. May I buy you an ale on this chill night?"
Before Sebastian could accept, which she feared he might, she said,
"Thank you, no, we have to go, to check on some business. But it was very kind of you to offer."
She made herself smile again.
"Thank you."
The way the man stared at her made her nervous. The thing was, she found herself staring back into his blue eyes just as intently, and she didn't know why. Finally, she broke the gaze and, after a bow of her head to bid the big man a good night, made her way toward the door.
"Something about him looked familiar?"
she whispered to Sebastian.
"Yes, we saw him earlier, out on the streets when we were on our way to Lethea's house."
She looked back over her shoulder, peering between the milling throng.
"I guess maybe that's all it is, then."
Before she went out the door, the man, as if he sensed her looking at him, turned. When their eyes met and he smiled, it was as if no one else existed for either of them. His smile was polite, no more, but it made her go cold and tingly all over, the way the dead voice in her head sometimes did. There was something frighteningly familiar about the feeling she got looking at him and the way he looked at her. Something about the look in his eyes reminded her of the voice. It was as if she remembered him from a deep dream she had completely forgotten until that very instant. The sight of him in her awake life left her shaken. She was relieved to make it out into the empty night and be on their way. She bundled her cloak's hood close around her face against the bitter wind as they hurried across the snow and down the street, her thighs stung with the cold. She was glad the stable was not far, but she knew that would be only a brief respite. It was going to be a long, cold night, but there was no choice. Lord Rawl's men were too close. They had to run. While Sebastian went to rouse the stableman, Jensen squeezed through the barn door. A lantern hanging from a beam provided enough light for her to make her way to the pen where Betty was tied up for the night. The shelter from the wind, along with the warm bodies of the horses and the sweet smell of hay and dusty wood, made the stable a cozy haven. Betty bleated plaintively when she saw Jensen, as if she feared she had been abandoned for all time. Betty's upright tail was a happy blur as Jensen sank to one knee and hugged the goat's neck. Jensen stood and stroked her hand along the silken ears, a touch Betty mooned over. As the horse in the next stall put her head over the rail to watch her stablemate, Betty stood on her hind legs, joyful to be reunited with her lifelong friend and eager to be closer. Jensen patted the wiry hair on Betty's fat middle.
"There's a good girl,"
she urged the lovable goat down.
"Glad to see you too, Betty."
Jensen, at 10, had been there for Betty's birth and had named her. Betty had been Jensen's only childhood friend and had listened patiently to any number of worries and fears. When her short horns first began to come in, Betty had in turn rubbed and comforted her head against her faithful friend. Other than her worry of being abandoned by her lifelong companion, Betty's fears in life were few. Jensen groped through the pack until her fingers located a carrot for the ever-hungry goat. Betty danced about as she watched, then, with her tail wagging in excitement, accepted the treat. For reassurance, after the torment of an unusual separation, she rubbed the top of her head against Jensen's thigh while chewing the carrot. The horse in the next stall, her bright, intelligent eyes watching, neighed softly and tossed her head. Jensen smiled and gave the horse a carrot along with a rub on her white blaze. Jensen heard the jangle of tack as Sebastian returned, along with the stableman, both carrying saddles. Each man in turn laid his load over the rail of Betty's stall. Betty, still wary of Sebastian, backed a few steps.
"Sorry to lose the company of your friend there,"
the man said, indicating the goat as he came up beside Sebastian. Jensen scratched Betty's ears.
"I appreciate her care."
"Not much care. The night isn't over."
The man's gaze shifted from Sebastian to Jensen.
Why do you two want to leave in the night, anyway? And why do you want to buy horses, especially at this hour?
Jensen froze in panic. She hadn't expected to have anyone question her, and so she had no answer prepared.
It's my mother, Sebastian said in a confidential tone.
He let out a convincing sigh.
We just got word that she's taken ill. They don't know if she'll last until we can get there. I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I didn't... Well, we'll just have to make it in time, that's all.
The man's suspicious expression softened with sympathy. Jensen was surprised at how credible Sebastian sounded. She tried to imitate his look of concern.
I understand, son. I'm sorry. I didn't realize. What can I do to help?
Which two horses can you sell us? Sebastian asked. The man scratched his whiskered chin.
You going to leave the goat?
Sebastian said yes. At the same time, Jensen said no. The man's big dark eyes looked from one to the other.
Betty won't slow us down, Jensen said. She can keep up. We'll make it to your mother just the same.
Sebastian leaned a hip against the rail.
I guess the goat will be leaving with us.
With a sigh of disappointment, the man gestured to the horse Jensen was scratching behind the ear.
Rusty here gets on well with that goat of yours. I guess she'd be as good to sell as any of the others. You're a tall girl, so she would fit you well.
Jensen nodded her agreement. Betty, as if she had understood every word, bleated hers.
I have a strong chestnut gelding that would better carry your weight, he said to Sebastian. Pete's down the way there, on the right. I'd be willing to let you have him along with Rusty here.
Why's she called Rusty? Jensen asked.
Dark as it is in here, you can't see so well, but she's a red roan. About as red as they come, all except for that white blaze on her forehead.
Rusty sniffed Betty. Betty licked Rusty's muzzle. The horse snorted softly in response.
Rusty it is, Sebastian said. And the other, then.
The stableman scratched his stubble again and nodded to seal the agreement.
I'll go get Pete.
When they returned, Jensen was pleased to see Pete nuzzle a greeting against Rusty's shoulder. With danger close on their heels, the last thing she wanted to have to worry about was handling bickering horses, but these two were friendly enough. The two men hurried at their work. A mother lay dying, after all. Riding with a blanket on her lap promised to be a welcome relief from traveling on foot. A horse would help keep her warm and make the night ahead more tolerable. They had a long rope for Betty, who tended to get distracted by things along the way, edible things especially. Jensen didn't know what Sebastian had to pay for the horses and tack, nor did she care. It was money that had come from her mother's killers, and would get them away. Getting away was all that mattered. With a wave to the stableman as he held the big door open for them, they rode out into the frigid night. Both horses, apparently pleased at the prospect of activity despite the hour, stepped briskly along the street. Rusty turned her head back, making sure that Betty, at their left, was keeping up. It wasn't long before they passed the last building on their way out of town. Thin clouds raced before the rising moon, but left enough light to turn the snow-covered road to a silk ribbon between the thick darkness of the woods along each side. Betty's rope suddenly jerked tight. Jensen looked over her shoulder, expecting to see the goat trying to nibble at a young branch. Instead, Betty, her legs stiff, had her hooves dug in, resisting any progress.
Betty! Jensen whispered harshly. Come on! What's wrong with you? Come on!
The goat's weight was no match for the horse, so she was dragged down the snowy road against her will. When Sebastian's horse stepped over, jostling Rusty, Jensen saw the trouble. They were overtaking a man walking down the road. In his dark clothing, they hadn't seen him at the right side against the dark of the trees. Knowing that horses didn't like surprises, Jensen patted Rusty's neck to assure her that the man wasn't anything to be frightened of. Betty, though, remained unconvinced and used all the rope available to swing a wide arc. Jensen saw then that it was the big blonde man from the inn, the man who had offered to buy them a drink, the man she thought, for some reason, should dwell only in her dream life, rather than in her waking life. Jensen kept an eye on the man as they passed him. As cold as she was, it felt as if a door opened into the infinitely colder eternal night of the underworld. Sebastian and the stranger exchanged a brief greeting in passing. Once beyond the man, Betty scampered ahead, pulling at her rope, eager to put some distance between her and the man.
Grushdiva du kalt misht.
Jensen, her breath caught fast at the end of a gasp, turned to stare wide-eyed at the man walking down the road behind. It sounded like it had been he who'd spoken the words. That was impossible. Those were the strange words from inside her head. Sebastian made no notice of it, so she didn't say anything lest he think her crazy. With Betty's agreement, Jensen urged her horse to pick up the pace. Just before they rounded a bend and were away, Jensen looked back one last time. In the moonlight, she saw the man grinning at her. Chapter 13. Oba was throwing a hay bale down from the loft when he heard his mother's voice.
Oba, where are you? Get down here!
Oba scurried down the ladder. He brushed hay from himself as he straightened before her waiting scowl.
What is it, Mama? Where's my medicine? And your cure?
Her glare swept across the floor.
I see you still haven't gotten the mess out of the barn. I didn't hear you come home last night. What took you so long? Look at that stanchion rail. Haven't you fixed that yet? What have you been doing all this time? Do I have to tell you every little thing?
Oba wasn't sure which question he was supposed to answer first. She always did that to him, confused him before he could answer her. When he faltered, she would then insult and ridicule him. After all he had learned the night before and all that had happened, he thought that he might feel more confident when he faced his mother. In the light of day, standing back in the barn with his mother gathered before him like a thunderhead, he felt much the same as he always did before her storming onslaught. Ashamed, small, worthless. He had felt big when he came home, important. Now he felt as if he were shrinking. Her words shriveled him.
Well, you was dawdling. That's what you was doing, dawdling. Here I am waiting for my medicine, my knees aching me, and my son Oba the Oaf is kicking a rock down the road, forgetting what I sent him for.
I didn't forget.
Then where's my medicine? Where is it?
Mama, I didn't get it.
I knew it. I knew you was spending the money I gave you. I worked my fingers to the bone at spinning to earn that, and you go wasting it on women. Whoring. That's what you was doing. Whoring!
No, Mama, I didn't waste it on women.
Then where's my medicine? Why didn't you get it like I told you to?
I couldn't because...
You mean you wouldn't, you worthless oaf. You only had to go to Lathea's.
Lathea's dead.
There. He'd said it. It was out and in the light of day. His mother's mouth hung open, but no words rained out. He had never seen her go silent like that before, seen her so shocked that her jaw just hung. He liked it. Oba fished a coin from his pocket, one he had set aside to return so she wouldn't think he'd spent her money. Amid the drama of such a rare silence, he handed her the coin.
Dead? Lathea?
She stared at the coin in her palm.
What do you mean, dead? She went ill?
Oba shook his head, feeling his confidence build as he thought about what he had done to Lathea, how he'd handled the troublesome sorceress.
No, Mama. Her house burned down. She was killed in the fire.
Her house burned?
His mother's brow drew together.
How do you know she died? Lathea isn't likely to be caught unawares by a fire. The woman is a sorceress.
Oba shrugged.
Well, all I know is that when I went to town, I heard a ruckus. People were running toward her house. We all found the place ablaze. A big crowd gathered around, but the fire was so hot that there was no chance of saving the place.
That last part was, to a degree, true. He had started to leave town, headed home, because he figured that if no one had spotted the fire, maybe they wouldn't until morning. He didn't want to be the one to start yelling fire. In light of history, that might look suspicious, especially to his mother.
She was a suspicious woman, one of her many peevish traits. Oba had planned on simply telling his mother the story of what he knew was bound to happen anyway, the blazing ruins the charred body found. But as he had been walking home after his visit to the inn not long after that Jensen woman and the man with her, Sebastian, passed by, leaving town on their journey to find Althea, he heard people yelling that there was a fire down at Lathea's place. Oba ran down the long, dark road with the rest of the people toward the orange glow off in the trees. He was just a bystander, same as everyone else. There was no reason to suspect him of anything.
Maybe Lathea escaped the flames.
His mother sounded more like she was trying to convince herself than him. Oba shook his head.
I stayed hoping the same as you, Mama. I knew you'd want me to help her if she was hurt. I stayed to do what I could. That's why I was so late.
That, too, was partly true. He had stayed along with the crowd watching the fire, listening to the talk. He had savored the crowd's anticipation, the gossip, the speculation.
She's a sorceress. Fire isn't likely to catch such a woman.
His mother was starting to sound suspicious. Oba had figured on this. He leaned a little toward her.
When the fire burned out enough, some of us men threw snow down so we could get in over the smoking rubble. Inside we found Lathea's bones.
Oba pulled a blackened finger bone from his pocket. He held it out, offering it to his mother. She stared down at the grim evidence but folded her arms without taking it. Pleased with the effect it had, Oba finally returned the treasure to his pocket.
She was in the middle of the room with one hand lifted above her head like she had tried to make it to the door but was overcome by the smoke. The men said that a fire's smoke was what put folks down, and then the fire got at them. That must have been what happened to Lathea. The smoke got her. Then, laying there on the floor, reaching toward the door, the fire burned her to death.
His mother glared at him, her mean little mouth all pinched up but silent. For once, she had no words. He found her glare, though, was just as bad. In the daggers of that glare, he could tell that she was thinking he was no good. Her bastard boy. Darken Rawl's bastard son. Almost royalty. Her arms slipped from their sullen knot as she turned away.
I have to get back to my spinning for Mr. Tukman. You get this mess scooped off the floor, you hear?
I will, Mama.
And you had better get that stanchion fixed before I come back and see that you've been loafing away the day.
For several days, Oba worked at the frozen muck on the floor, but made little headway. The weather had stayed bitterly cold, so the frozen mound, if anything, had only hardened. His efforts at wearing it down seemed interminable, like trying to chip away granite ledge, or his mother's stony disposition. He had his other chores, of course, and he couldn't let them go. He had fixed the stanchion and a broken hinge on the barn door. The animals had to be attended to, along with 100 other small things. In his head, as he worked, he planned the construction of their fireplace. He would use the back wall between the house and barn since it was already existing. Mentally, he stacked stones against it, creating the shape of the firebox. He already had his eye on a long stone to use for the lintel. He would mortar everything all together properly. When Oba set his mind to doing something, he put his all into it. He didn't do any job he started just halfway. In his mind's eye, he pictured how surprised and happy his mother would be when she saw what he'd built them. She would recognize his worth then. She would finally acknowledge his value. But he had other work to do before he could begin to build a fireplace. One job in particular loomed before him. The surface of the mound of frozen muck in the barn showed the scars of the battle. It was now pocked with holes, places where he had been able to find a weakness, a place with air or dry straw underneath that had allowed him to break out a chunk. Each time a piece went pop and came loose, he was sure that he had at last found a way into the formidable tomb of ice. But each time had been a false hope. Chipping away with the scoop shovel was slow going, but Oba was not a quitter. The worry had come to him that perhaps a man of his importance should not be wasting his time on such menial labor.
Frozen manure hardly seemed the province of a man who was in all likelihood something akin to a prince. At the least, he now knew he was an important man, a man with Rawl blood in his veins, a direct descendant, the son of the man who had ruled Dahara, Darkon Rawl. There probably wasn't a single person who had not heard of Darkon Rawl, Oba's father. Sooner or later, he would confront his mother with the truth she had been keeping from him, the truth of the man he really was. He just couldn't figure out how to do it without her discovering that Lethea had spilled the news before she spilled her blood. Winded from a particularly spirited attack on the frozen mound, Oba rested his forearms on the shovel's handle while he caught his breath. Despite the cold, sweat trickled down from his matted blonde hair.
"Oba the oaf," said his mother as she strode into the barn. "Standing around doing nothing, thinking nothing, worth nothing, that's you, isn't it, Oba the oaf?"
She glided to a stop, her mean little mouth all puckered up as she peered down her nose at him.
"Mama, I was just catching my breath."
He pointed around at the chips of ice littering the floor, evidence of his strenuous efforts.
"I've been working at it, Mama, I have."
She didn't look. She was glaring at him. He waited, knowing she had something more on her mind than the mound of frozen muck. He always knew when she was on a mission to trouble him, to make him feel like the muck he stood in. From the dark crevices and hidey holes around the barn, the rats watched with their little black rat eyes. With her critical gaze locked on him, his mother held out a coin. She held it between her thumb and first finger, not simply to convey the coin itself, but its importance. Oba was a little bewildered. Lethea was dead. There was no other sorceress anywhere close, none that he knew of anyway, who could provide his mother's medicine or his cure. He obediently turned his palm up anyway.
"Look at it," she commanded,
dropping the coin into his hand. Oba held it out to the light of the doorway, scrutinizing it with care. He knew she expected him to find something. What? He didn't know. He turned it over as he cautiously stole a glance at her. He carefully inspected the other side, but still saw nothing out of the ordinary.
"Yes, Mama?" "Notice anything unusual about it, Oba?"
"No, Mama."
"It doesn't have a scratch along the edge."
Oba puzzled over that for a moment, then looked again at the coin, this time carefully inspecting the edge.
"No, Mama." "That's the coin you gave back to me."
Oba nodded, having no reason to doubt her.
"Yes, Mama, the coin you gave me for Lethea. But I told you, Lethea died in the fire, so I couldn't buy your medicine. That's why I gave you your coin back."
Her hot glare was murderous, but her voice was arrestingly cool and collected.
"It isn't the same coin, Oba."
Oba grinned.
"Sure it is, Mama.
The coin I gave you had a mark on the edge, a mark I put there."
Oba's grin withered as his mind raced. He tried to think of what to say, what he could say, that she would believe. He couldn't contend that he put the coin in a pocket and then pulled out a different coin when he gave it back to her, because he never had any money of his own. She knew very well that he didn't have any money. She wouldn't allow it. She thought he was no good, and that he might waste it. But he had money now. He had all the money from Lethea, a fortune. He remembered hurriedly gathering up all the coins that had spilled from Lethea's pocket, including the coin he'd only just given her. When he later set aside a coin to return to his mother, he hadn't known that she had marked the coin she'd given him. Oba had the bad luck of returning a different coin than the one she had originally given him.
"But, Mama, are you sure? Maybe you only thought you marked the coin. Maybe you forgot."
She slowly shook her head.
"No. I marked it so that if you spent it on drinking or on women, I would know, because I could go look for it if I had to and see what you had done."
The conniving bitch. She didn't even trust her own son,
What kind of mother was she, anyway? What proof did she have, other than a missing tiny scratch on the edge of a coin? None. The woman was a lunatic. He decided to bluff.
But, Mama, you must be wrong. I don't have any money. You know I don't. Where would I get a different coin?
That's what I'd like to know. Her eyes were frightening. He could hardly breathe under their blistering scrutiny. Her voice, though, remained composed. I told you to buy medicine with that money.
How could I? Lathea died. I gave you your coin back.
She looked so broad and powerful standing there before him, like an avenging spirit in the flesh come to speak for the dead. Maybe Lathea's spirit had returned to tell on him. He hadn't considered that possibility. That would be just like the troublesome sorceress. She was sneaky. This might be just what she had done, intent on denying him his importance, his due prestige.
Do you know why I named you Oba?
No, Mama.
It's an ancient Daharan name. Did you know that, Oba?
No, Mama.
His curiosity got the best of him.
What does it mean?
It means two things, servant and king. I named you Oba, hoping you might someday be a king, and if not, then you would at least be a servant of the Creator. Fools are rarely made kings. You will never be a king. That was just a silly dream of a new mother. That leaves servant. Who do you serve, Oba?
Oba knew very well who he served. In so doing, he had become invincible.
Where did you get this coin, Oba?
I told you, Mama. I couldn't get your medicine because Lathea had died in the fire at her place. Maybe the mark on your coin rubbed off against something in my pocket.
She seemed to consider his words.
Are you sure, Oba?
Oba nodded, hoping that maybe he was at last turning her mind away from the coin mix-up.
Of course, Mama. Lathea died. That's why I gave you your coin back. I couldn't get your medicine.
His mother lifted an eyebrow.
Really, Oba?
She slowly drew her hand from the pocket of her dress. He couldn't see what it was she had, but he was relieved that he was finally bringing her around.
That's right, Mama. Lathea was dead.
He found he liked saying that.
Really, Oba? You couldn't get the medicine? You wouldn't lie to your mother, would you, Oba?
He shook his head emphatically.
No, Mama.
Then what's this?
She turned over her hand and held out the bottle of medicine Lathea had given him before he had dealt with her.
I found this in your jacket pocket, Oba.
Oba stared at the cursed bottle, at the troublesome sorceress's revenge. He should have killed the woman right off before she gave him the telltale bottle of medicine. He had completely forgotten that he had put it in a pocket of his jacket, intending to toss it in the woods on his way home that night. What with all the important new things he had been learning, he had completely forgotten about the cursed bottle of medicine.
Well, I think it must be an old bottle.
An old bottle? It's full.
Her razor-edged voice was back.
How did you manage to get a bottle of medicine from a woman who was dead, in her house that had already burned down? How, Oba? And how is it that you gave me back a different coin than the one I gave you to pay with? How?
She took a step closer.
How, Oba?
Oba backed a step. He couldn't pull his eyes away from the cursed cure. He couldn't look up into his mother's fierce eyes. If he did, he just knew she would wither him to tears under her deadly glare.
Well, I what, Oba?
Well, I what, you filthy bastard boy? You worthless, lazy, lying bastard boy? You wretched, scheming, vile bastard boy, Oba Shock?
Oba's eyes turned up. He was right. She had him fixed in her deadly glare.
but he had become invincible.
Obaral, he said.
She didn't flinch. He realized then that she had been goading him into admitting he knew. It was all part of her scheme. That name, Rawl, screamed out how he had come to know it, betraying everything to his mother. Oba stood frozen, his mind in a wild state of turmoil, like a rat with a foot on his tail.
"The spirits curse me," she said under her breath. "I should have done what Lethea always told me. I should have spared us all. You killed her, you loathsome bastard, you contemptible lying—"
Quick as a fox, Oba whipped the shovel around, putting all his weight and strength behind the swing. The steel shovel rang like a bell against her skull. She dropped like a sack of grain pushed out of the loft. Bump! Oba rapidly retreated a step, fearful she might skitter toward him, spider-like, and with her mean little mouth bite him on the ankle. He was positive that she was fully capable of it, the conniving bitch. Lightning quick, he darted forward and whacked her again with the shovel, right in the same place on her broad forehead, then retreated out of range of her teeth before she could bite him like a spider. He often thought of her as a spider, a black widow. The ring of steel on skull hung in the otherwise still air of the barn, slowly, slowly, slowly dying away. Silence, like a heavy shroud, settled around him. Oba stood poised, shovel cocked back over his shoulder, ready to swing again. He watched her carefully. Nearly clear pinkish fluid leaked from both her ears, out across the frozen muck. In a frenzy of fear and rage, he ran forward and swung the shovel at her head, over and over. The ringing blows of steel on bone echoed around the barn, creating one long, clangorous din. The rats watching him with their little black rat eyes scurried for their holes. Oba staggered back, gasping for air after the violent effort of silencing her. He panted as he watched her still form sprawled atop the mound of frozen muck. Her arms were spread out wide to each side, as if asking for a hug. The sneaky bitch. She might be up to something. Trying to make amends, probably. Offering a hug, as if that could make up for the times he'd spent in the pen. Her face looked different. She had an odd expression. He tiptoed closer for a look. Her skull was all misshapen, like a ripe melon broken on the ground. This was so new that he couldn't gather his thoughts. Mama, her melon head, all broke open. For good measure, he whacked her three more times, quick as he could, then retreated to a safe distance, shovel at the ready, should she suddenly spring up to start yelling at him. That would be just like her, sneaky. The woman was a lunatic. The barn remained silent. He saw his breath puffing out in the cold air. No breath came from his mother. Her chest was still. The crimson pool around her head oozed down the muck mound. Some of the holes he'd chopped, filled with the runny contents of her curious melon head, all broken open on the ground. Oba began to feel more confident then that his mother was not going to say hateful things to him anymore. His mother, not being too smart, had probably gone along with Lethea's nagging and had been talked into hating him, her only son. The two women had ruled his life. He had been nothing but the helpless servant of the two harpies. Fortunately, he had finally become invincible and had rescued himself from them both.
"Do you want to know who I serve, Mama? I serve the voice that made me invincible, the voice that rid me of you."
His mother had nothing to say. At long last, she had nothing more to say. Then, Oba grinned. He pulled out his knife. He was a new man, a man who pursued intellectual interests when they arose. He thought he should have a look at what other odd and curious things might be found inside his lunatic mother. Oba liked to learn new things. Oba was eating a nice lunch of eggs, cooked in the hearth he had started to build for himself, when he heard a wagon rumbling into the yard. It had been over a week since his sneaky mother had opened her mean little mouth for the last time. Oba went to the door, opened it a crack, and stood eating his eggs as he peered out to see the rear of a wagon pulled up close by. A man climbed down. It was Mr. Tukman, who regularly brought wool. Oba's mother was a spinster who made thread for Mr. Tukman. He used the thread on his loom. With so many new things demanding his attention lately, Oba had forgotten all about Mr. Tukman. Oba glanced over to the corner to see how much thread his mother had ready. Not much. Bales of wool sat to the side, waiting to be spun into thread. The least his mother could have done would be to attend to her work before she started causing trouble. Oba didn't know what to do. When he looked back to the doorway, Mr. Tukman was standing right there looking in. He was a tall man, thin, with a big nose and ears. His hair was graying and as curly as the wool he dealt in. He was recently widowed. Oba knew that his mother liked Mr. Tukman. Maybe he could have leached some of the venom from her fangs, softened her a bit. It was an interesting theory to contemplate.
"Afternoon, Oba."
His eyes that Oba had always found curiously liquid, were peering in the crack, searching the house.
"Is your mother about?"
Oba, feeling a little violated by the man's roving eyes, stood holding the plate of eggs, trying to think what to do, what to say. Mr. Tukman's gaze settled on the fireplace. Oba, standing ill at ease behind the door, reminded himself that he was a new man, an important man. Important men weren't unsure of themselves. Important men seized the moment and created their own greatness.
"Mama?"
Oba set down his plate as he glanced to the fireplace.
"Oh, she's about somewhere."
Wool-headed Mr. Tukman stared stone-faced at Oba's grin for a time.
"You heard about Lethea, what they found at her place?"
Oba thought the man had a mouth kind of like his mother had, mean, sneaky.
"Lethea?"
Oba sucked at a piece of egg stuck between his teeth.
"She's dead. What could they find?" "More precisely, what they didn't find, I guess you could say, money. Lethea had money, everyone knew that. But they found none in her house."
Oba shrugged.
"Must have burned up. Melted."
Mr. Tukman grunted his skepticism.
"Maybe, maybe not. Some folks say maybe it was gone before the fire started."
Oba felt indignant that people just couldn't let a thing go. Didn't they have their own business to mind? Why couldn't they leave well enough alone? They should rejoice that the sorceress was out of their lives and leave it at that. They had to keep picking at it, though. Peck, 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 like a gaggle of geese at the grain. Busybodies, that's what they were.
"I'll tell Mama you were here." "I need the thread she's spun. I have another load of wool for her. I need to be on my way. Got other people waiting."
The man had a whole bevy of women who spun wool for him. Didn't he ever give his poor spinsters a chance to catch their breath?
"Well, I'm afraid that Mama hasn't had time to..."
Mr. Tukman was staring at the fireplace again, only more intently this time. The look on his face was more than curious. It bordered on anger. The man, accustomed to ordering people around and always more bold than Oba felt comfortable around, stepped through the door and into the house, to the center of the room, still staring at the fireplace. His arm rose, pointing.
What's that? Dear Creator!
Oba looked where he was pointing. At the new fireplace being built against the stone wall that separated the house from the barn, Oba thought his work was quite well done, sturdy and straight. He had studied other fireplaces and learned how they were done. Even though the chimney wasn't built all the way up yet, He was using it. He had put it to good advantage. Oba saw then what Mr. Tukman was really pointing at. Mama's jawbone. Well, wasn't this just something? Oba hadn't expected visitors, especially snoopy visitors. What gave this man the right to poke his nose into other people's houses just because they spun wool for him? Mr. Tukman started backing toward the door. Oba knew that Mr. Tukman would talk about what he'd seen. The man was a gossip, already flapping his tongue to anyone who would listen about Lathea's missing money, which, after all, was really Oba's, when you considered the lifetime of trouble he had endured to earn it. Who were all these people coming out of the woodwork to stick up for the troublesome sorceress? When Mr. Tukman started blabbing about what he saw in the fireplace, there were sure to be questions. Everyone would have to stick their noses in it and want to know whose it was. They would probably start fretting over his mother now, just like they were doing over the sorceress. Oba, a new man, a man of action, could hardly let that happen. Oba was an important man, he'd learned. Raw blood coursed through his veins, after all. Important men acted, handled problems as they arose, quickly, efficiently, decisively. Oba seized Mr. Tukman by the back of his neck, halting his retreat. The man struggled fiercely. He was tall and wiry, but he was no match for Oba's strength or speed. With a grunt of effort, Oba plunged his knife up into Mr. Tukman's middle. The man's mouth opened wide. His eyes, always so liquid, always so curious, went wide as well, filled now with a look of terror. Oba followed the obnoxious Mr. Tukman to the ground. They had work to do. Oba was never afraid of hard work. First, there was the struggling, wool-headed snoop to deal with. Then there was the matter of his wagon. People would probably come looking for him. Oba's life was getting complicated. Mr. Tukman called for help. Oba rammed his knife up into the soft part under Mr. Tukman's chin. Oba leaned over him, watched the man struggle, knowing he was going to die. Oba had nothing against Mr. Tukman, really, even though the man was impertinent and bossy. This was all that troublesome sorceress's fault. She was still making Oba's life difficult. She had probably sent some message to his mother, and then to Mr. Tukman from beyond in the underworld. The bitch. Then his mother had to get all sneaky and suspicious, and now this irksome pest Mr. Tukman. They were like a swarm of locusts, come from nowhere to plague him. It was because he was important, he knew. It was probably time for changes. Oba couldn't stay around and keep having people who knew him pestering him with questions. He was too important to be in this little nothing of a place anyway. Mr. Tukman grunted in his futile effort to escape. It was time for the unhappy widower to join Oba's lunatic mother and the troublesome sorceress with the keeper of the underworld, the world of the dead. And then the time had come for Oba to take up his important life as a new man and to move on to better places. Just as the realization struck him that he would never again have to go in the barn and see the mound of frozen muck that he hadn't been able to dislodge with the scoop shovel, despite the ranting insistence of his lunatic mother, it occurred to him that if he had used the pickaxe, that would have made quick work of it. Well, wasn't that just something?